Welcome to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. At Finstrat, we provide CFO-led accounting, finance, and reporting services to assist clients monetize their business. Stick around to the end of the podcast, and I'll share how you can be our next guest. Now, on to the show. Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast. I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of Finstrat Management. Really excited because with us today, we have the co-founder and CEO of Needle.ai, Vikram Srinivasan. Vikram, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, thanks for having me, Christian. Very excited to be here.
My pleasure. Hey, so why don't we start with Needle.ai? I'd love to know what problem you guys are solving in the marketplace.
The name of the company kind of gives it away. We're called Needle.ai because we're trying to find the needle in the haystack. So the observation is that I think we're living in a world of information overload. And this is particularly important for large enterprises where CXOs, you know, CEOs, CFOs are trying to make high-value business decisions in a space where the market is changing fast. There's news coming in at high velocity. The regulators are changing their minds all the time. There is a whole bunch of information scattered within the enterprise in your SharePoint, in your drives, in your Teams messages, and so on and so forth. So how do you sort of keep on top of all of this? Because if you give the power to the CXOs, the CFOs, the CEOs to have this information at their fingertips, the right information at the right point of time, you have a business edge in the market. And that is the problem we're trying to solve.
And so, I would love to know, the problem resonates. I have to imagine every single one of our listeners can imagine an instance where they've dealt with, more information than they have time or resources to sift through. But was there something in particular that took place that you and your co-founder realized that this was a problem worth tackling?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think part of this comes from my co-founder's lived experience. So he's been an investor in the public markets, runs a portfolio management service firm, a PE firm, managing, lots of money. And he's been doing it for 30 years very successfully. And he definitely needs an information in edge in the market. And sort of it came off that lived pain point that he was facing. And I sort of brought the tech to the table and we got together. And that's how this whole company got incubated a few years ago.
Fantastic. Okay, so fast forward to today, obviously a whole host of industries that rely on data, but have you found that there's been certain use cases or industries in particular where you're finding a lot of traction?
Yeah, so we are finding traction primarily in the financial services space and the consulting world, right? Both of these rely on a lot of data, a lot of information. Knowledge workers, spending most of their time where the input is information and the output is some form of synthesized information that gives them an edge in the market, right? So these are the two spaces where we are finding a ton of pull in the market at this point.
Makes good sense. And so with that, I don't want you to reveal any trade secrets, but can you give us a sense of how you're leveraging artificial intelligence to surface insight?
Absolutely. So I think so the way to think about it is, I think the way I articulate it actually is, Needle.ai is like your AI chief of staff, which is helping you to sort of stay on top of the market, stay on top of finding, in this jungle of information that's out there, finding what makes sense, etc. Right? And what has changed? I think like we started this company actually well before the ChatGPT craze. And we were building the company. We knew this problem was very relevant. But I think what has changed in the era of AI is sort of the ability to surface this information more easily, right? The AI has the power to sort of look over your information, summarize it, synthesize it, way more easily than we had the ability to do maybe 3 years ago before sort of ChatGPT was revealed to the world, and at least at price points that made sense. And I think that's what has changed. And we leverage a ton of AI in our in the company for different kinds of use cases in the financial services and consulting space to help surface insights to our customers.
And so, you know, obviously a big part of, you know, leveraging AI is being able to train your models. Again, I don't want you to reveal any trade secrets, but, you know, how's the process been, you know, knowing that you're seeking to uncover very discrete pieces of information that could be very unique to, you know, individual to individual?
Right. So I think that's a great question, Christian. And I think that comes back also to some of the expertise and the IP we have. So the core part of what we do in extracting these insights is sort of what is called information retrieval. How do you find the right pieces of nuggets in all of this information?
Yep.
That's one vector that we have. And how can you be very accurate and reliable about it, right? Because when you're making high stakes business decisions, as you know, AI or ChatGPT oftentimes cooks stuff up and makes up facts that don't exist. And that's a huge no-no, right? So one vector is how do you make sure that you're surfacing the right information accurately and reliably? And the second vector is, how do you make it work on all kinds of complex documents, right? Because you have news information, regulatory information that's coming in, SEC financial filings. There could be all kinds of complex PDFs. There could be PowerPoint documents in here. How do you sort of scan over all of that and make sure you're picking out the right nuggets, right? So here it's actually, our IP is not is necessary is primarily in the information retrieval or the search piece of it, and that's what we are good at. My background and my training is in doing search on complex kind of data, in dealing with high velocity data, and extracting the right kind of nuggets out of it. And
okay.
Then we sort of combine that with sort of the Gen AI techniques to make sure that we are.
And I think that's a it's a great segue. What was going to be my next question is, if we could take a step back, I heard that your founder has an investing background. I would love to know what was your professional career leading up to co-founder?
Yeah, that's a great question. So my career is, I'm actually an academic turned entrepreneur. I did my PhD down at UC San Diego. Then I was a professor for a few years back east in Singapore at the National University of Singapore. Moved back to India, did an AI startup earlier, which was providing search for e-commerce retailers. And we were acquired by Target. And so our search technology powers Target's e-com search. So spent a few years doing that. And then I transitioned into this startup, which is Needle.ai.
Wow. And so, you know, obviously, maybe not obviously. I know when I think of search, I think of Google. But I've also come to the understanding that since then, you know, they were just happened to be in the right place at the right time with the ability to capture the market share that they did, and that there are extremely more mature search capabilities out there. So can you give us like a search 101 primer, you know, for the benefits of our audience who are not familiar? How does search not only, you know, sift through this information, but do so quickly? Because we know a big part is how fast you can return results.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think the search space is evolving. And again, thanks to AI, I think there are serious contenders and challengers to Google coming up. I mean, going through the whole Google algorithm or search algorithms is a whole beast. But I think at the end of the day, it's about it's a complex combination of you know, data, their ability to crawl the entire internet at scale, right? So if you think about it, when Google started in 1998, I was a grad student at that point of time. You know, there was the entire internet was maybe 10 gigabytes of data, right?
Nothing.
Now It's nothing. It's nothing. And today it's petabytes of data, petabytes of information coming in. A lot of it is noise, right? So I think the foundational layer is how do you sort of ingest, how do you build this sort of gargantuan monster that's able to ingest and digest all of this information? And there's a lot of smarts that goes into that, which includes core engineering, which includes a whole bunch of AI smarts, etc., so that you can sort of what's called index and retrieve this information very, very efficiently in a smart fashion, right? So you're, as you're ingesting in this information, you're making all kinds of connections between different kinds of documents, what people could ask. You're looking at user behavior, right? Like when people ask a question on Google, what are they clicking on, right? That's a huge signal to sort of marry what is called user intent, what they're trying to ask for with what they need to serve up, right? So there's a lot of signals, user behavior, like 7 billion people on the planet, all the time asking questions on Google, retrieving documents. That itself is a signal, ingesting all of this data. And it's a marvel of engineering. I mean, it's nothing short of rocket science what they're doing. That's the short answer I can give you. So,
Well, I think it's a great answer. Because I understood it, so that's good. But you know, as I think about it, though, I mean, and you can please correct me if I'm mistaken, but you know, I would think as compared to Needle AI, Google actually has an easier job because the information it's indexing all resides in the internet. Whereas if I think about a business leader, and as you pointed out at the beginning, you have disparate data sources that may not be connected, and so. How have you tackled that issue in bringing your solution to market?
That's a strangely brilliant and timely question because I just wrote a blog on it today.
All right, we're going to have to include the blog in the show notes. Let's make sure.
Yeah. So I think you're absolutely right. Right. I think the enterprise scenario where the business owner is looking for very specific pieces of information. And especially across very diverse types of information, right? Like I said, PowerPoint documents where there are charts, there are tables, complex documents from very disparate sources is a very hard problem for two reasons, right? In a Google search, you know, you don't know what is out there. It's like there's billions and billions of documents or billions and billions and pages, and you sort of get an okay answer, you're fine with it, right? Or you type the question again and you sort of get another answer and you click the next page and you keep sifting through it. But now we have these conversational interfaces where like ChatGPT, where the user expects to ask a question and get exactly the right nuanced answer. Remember, in this case, unlike a Google, in Google, the user is a novice, right? We don't know what's out there. So it's sort of like Don Rumsfeld's famous quote, right? The known knowns and the unknown unknowns. The challenge that we have here is as a domain, as an enterprise user, as a CXO, you know exactly what is out there in this vast ocean of data that needs to come back as an answer when I look for it, right? Because I know I wrote that document at some point of time. And when I ask a question and I don't get an answer which is nuanced, accurate and comprehensive, it causes disappointment, right? But that's not the case with Google. And that's really, really a hard problem to solve.
Interesting. Okay, so let's build on that. So earlier, you pointed out that there are models that create hallucinations. Mm-hmm. And I know there are companies out there who are, exclusively focused on that. But, question for you is, even if you have a user, say like myself with my CFO hat on, and I'm very familiar with the information that's out there, but my data set still could be large enough and I'm getting older. How do you control for accuracy and ensuring that, what comes back, is going to be, as close as possible to what I'm looking for?
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question, right? And again, it goes back to the blog I wrote today. So in the enterprise search scenario, right, what happens is, you, Christian, as a domain expert, know your data very well, and you sort of query or ask certain types of questions, right? But if I go to another enterprise, another customer, they have very different types of data, right? Because if I go to a consulting firm, for example, one of the big four, let's say, they might have tons of PowerPoints. They have very different types of data. And based on their business needs, they ask very different types of questions. So the answer at some level, Christian, is that our search engine sort of doesn't work completely well out of the box. We need to work with you to tune for your data and for the kinds of information that you're seeking, right? It's not, I mean, and that's exactly the challenge that we have, because people come with the expectation that it's a Google, it's going to work out of the box. But because your information is so specific to you and your information needs are specific to you, we actually have to do a ton of work, or not a ton of work, but some work with you to make sure that it meets your needs, right? So it's not an out-of-the-box solution, and that requires some effort and customization.
That makes good sense. Okay, so from there, I would love to know. So really fortunate. We have a founder who's based in India, outside the US. But that said, I'd love to know your perspective then on how you think about scaling your company. Knowing that you have to work with your users to a degree, are you focused exclusively on the Indian market, the US market, both, or other?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we started out with, I mean, given our geographical location, we started out with the Indian market and Southeast Asia. I think it's a great market to experiment and find your product market fit, so to speak. But what we realize is that US is the market to be in, right? In the sense that it's sort of the deepest market, the most mature market out there. And that is sort of where we are focused on. So we have also a partner-led motion. So where we have, some of the hyperscalers like a Microsoft or an Azure who are partnering with us. We have one of the big four audit firms who's also a partner with us, who's using us internally and taking us out to market in the APAC or the Asia region. But our own focus right now is on the US market. So I'm actually straddling between the US and India at this point of time. I spend half my time in the US, half my time in India, back and forth, trying to develop the US market, right? Because for these kinds of conversations, it's not a, one time you click and buy. The internet is great, AI is great, but nothing beats face-to-face conversations.
I agree. My experience reinforces yours. But if we can, I would love to, if we can go a little bit further. As we're recording this, it's mid-May. We may be on the tail end of a trade war with the United States with the rest of the world. One of the positions that our president has made is that the rest of the world wants to do business with the United States. And so, if you can just maybe give a little bit more perspective of why, not being in the US, and just maybe, I think our audience would benefit hearing is, like, how does the rest of the world, perceive the US market? Are there any unique nuances that you think about for purposes of penetration? I think really valuable perspective you can provide us.
Yeah, I think the what I find is the decision-making velocity is much faster in the higher in the US. And as I said, it's a much deeper market. People are more open to innovative ideas in the US market as opposed to many of the other markets that we worked with, right? So that alone, for me, I mean, I think it's still I think the most innovative place on the planet. The most exciting stuff still does come out of the US. And I think the mindset for risk-taking and quick decision-making that can move the needle is much higher in the US. So I mean, and the maturity of the markets, right? Even if I look at, can I sort of expand on this a little bit, if
Yes,
that's
please.
okay? So, I mean, I can look at it from the point of view of let's look at even some of the discussions I've been having in the US with customers versus India on AI and tech, right? Or even in Asia. I think there's a huge difference. US customers oftentimes seem to know what they want exactly, what solution they're looking for, because AI is still emerging. It's sort of the new internet kid on the block, I would say. I mean, what happened in 2000s during the dot-com boom and bust is sort of now magnified maybe 1,000 times with the AI buzz that is coming out, right? But at some level, people are still sort of figuring out how to make AI work for them. And what we find is there are certain customers in the US we are able to have very, very deep and mature conversations with. They know what they want, and they're willing to move much faster compared to in other markets that we're talking to, right? There's a lot more convincing that needs to happen, and that's not the case in the US markets. So to me, I think I find, and I've been talking to a lot of our other entrepreneurs coming out of India, and it's a no-brainer for us. If we want to build enterprise software, if we want to build and go to market and have deep impact, US is the place to be.
Okay, so I would love to then build on culture. So again, as you shared, you spent time in the US. You're now back in India. How do you think about creating culture within Needle dot AI? And, I'd love to hear your answer, because you've spent time in both countries, and presumably cultures are different, not the same. And so, how have you infused that in how you're building the company?
Oh yeah, I mean, see, I think given, I mean, so let me put it this way, right? I think India, when I moved, I mean, and culture is changing in India too. I think as the economy grows, things are changing dramatically. So I'll touch upon a few aspects of culture, right? So let's first talk from the point of view of risk-taking ability or innovation ability, right? So I think the US has always been, or at least my experience with the US, it's a far more a culture that's open to taking risks and making big bets, right? And that's sort of driven what the country is today, right? India traditionally has not, at least the cultures that we grew up in, I grew up in, etc., until 20 years ago, was a very risk-averse culture, risk-averse society. Kids wouldn't want to go out and do the next greatest and latest startup, at least when I was growing up, which has dramatically changed now, right? Because we have lots of startup success stories coming out now. So people are now open to actually, taking the leap, trying to build a startup, and the deep tech innovative ecosystem is also changing. So that's one aspect of it, which is the risk-taking capability, right? The second aspect is the culture in terms of, let's say, ownership, accountability, etc., within the organization, right? And these are things, I mean, at some level, it's, I guess, any good company that you need to build, I mean, I guess as the CEO, I have three jobs, right? Set certain direction for the company, make sure, we don't lack money. Money is coming in somehow, and find the right people and let them loose, right? And that's have a culture of ownership, accountability, where people don't need to be managed too much. And that actually is at some level a strange culture in India still. Because folks in many, many parts are still used to being told what to do and are very, very afraid of you sort of veering off the straight line path, right? So sort of inculcating that culture takes of ownership, accountability, and being, self-driven, takes some effort.
Well, it sounds like India is very fortunate because they have a tremendous asset in a company like Needle AI that recognizes that there's value in empowering your staff. And so, with that, we can build on building the company. What's your journey been on to product market fit? I'd love to hear how things have evolved. Any key lessons learned along the way?
Yeah, so I can talk about some of my key lessons. So, I'm a very, I'm, I mean, I gave you my background. I'm a very technical guy, which means I don't like to talk to people. I'd rather sit.
Thank you for joining us.
I'd rather sit in a room and, read something or write code or whatever, right? I think that's the biggest mistake I made as a founder. The biggest mistake, which is especially so I tried for a product like Needle, right? It's not so there are these strategies of what's called product-led growth motion, where you build something, put it out there, people come and try it, they swipe their credit cards and buy in the enterprise, right? The challenge, so we tried all those routes because I was sort of averse to going out there in the market and selling. And the big lesson we learned was so the first lesson we tried was the first thing that we tried was try to go this product-led growth route, which is put it out there and hope people will come and try us, figure us out, and start using it. But I think the product is fair. There are multiple challenges. The product is fairly complex. It fits in a certain context, which is sort of mid-market to large enterprises. Like small enterprises cannot use it. And once you go to the mid-market to large enterprises, the swipe and buy kind of thing doesn't come into play because you're talking about sensitive data, right? And sensitive data cannot just fly and go into some other cloud infrastructure and stuff like that. So it's a complex motion. And what we realized was, I had to be in front of customers. I had to talk to customers. And once we started talking to the large customers, the story started landing. It was when we tried the product-led growth motion, we tried the small and medium enterprise motion. None of that really worked. But once we went mid-market and large enterprises, the story started landing and there was pull, right? And it was a completely different story after that. And so my biggest lesson is put yourself out there. As a founder, and sales and distribution are the most important things that you can do.
I agree 100%. I don't get credit for this, but I heard someone say a long time ago, it's easier to see eye to eye when you're face to face.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
so, obviously there's a tremendous amount of conveniences with Zoom. I mean, we're talking on the other side of the globe. But I think that's brilliant insight. So obviously your co-founder brings a tremendous amount of investing experience, but I would love to know, have you bootstrapped to date? Have you done any outside financing? What's your experience been?
So we are bootstrapped at this point of time because it's taken us some time to get to product market fit. We will be going out to raise in a few months, but at this point of time, we're still bootstrapped and we're doing okay.
And as you start to think ahead, what are some of the things that are important to you as you start to meet potential investors?
So I think so I guess where we are coming from, right? So we are not, neither of us are founders who are looking to flip quickly and make a quick exit. So we are in this for the long term. I mean, so that's key. We are coming at it to build a company that lasts, hopefully a generational company if possible, which means we're looking for investors with a very long-term mindset and patient capital, right? Because there are all kinds of investors out there, folks who are looking to sort of pass on the buck to the next round of funding and get their 220 carry and make it look good on the books. That's not the kind of investors we are looking for. We are looking for patient capital, that's looking to build a foundational company with us. So we're looking for partners.
Great. I love it. I think there's a tremendous amount of value in doing some introspection before you start talking with investors. Because you're right. You know, as many investors as there are, you have different viewpoints and time frames,
I know, right?
and risk profiles. So I think that's brilliant. Vikram, I've genuinely enjoyed having you on the podcast. This has been great. A whole host of awesome insights. Before we wrap up, I got two final questions for you. One has been my long-term go-to, and that is, if you had an opportunity to go back and have a conversation with your younger self, it doesn't matter how you choose how young, but what would you share with yourself?
What would I share with myself? So I think, it's about so yeah, what I would share with myself is I'm not looking, I mean, at the end of the day, I think, I know this sounds very cliched, but it's about the journey, right? So what I mean by that is, there are no easy answers. Nothing is easy. You have to embrace the suck, but as long as you're curious and learning and doing something with purpose, right? Then you can keep going for a long time. So I'm not looking to retire. I'm not looking to whatever, right? As long as I'm having fun, I'm learning. I know it's a brutally hard journey. I'm sure Christian, you're familiar. I mean, as a startup founder, it's not easy. But I think the kind of learning you get out of it, the kind of amazing people you meet out of it, I think this has been the best thing I could have hoped for, right? So I started out, my career has actually been a very meandering career. I've always looked to do what's interesting, not what's easy. And I think maybe I think that's the thing I would take away from this, right? Look to do things that are interesting, not necessarily easy. And yeah, that's the big takeaway I would have.
I think really well said. In fact, coincidentally, I was thinking about this last night before I called it a day. And it's just this notion that it's okay if things are hard. You know, and I you're right. It is a bit cliche, but maybe this is just my own personal experience, but just this understanding that is, I mean, this is somewhat par for the course, you know. But it's also a good road indicator. I'm not sadomasochistic, but it can provide some evidence that, if it's painful, the growth lies where people aren't. And generally what I found is you're right, that we shy away from hard things. Second and final question, and before we wrap up, so only recently I had a member of our production team said, hey, this would be a great question to ask, and I agree with them. And that is, if there is anyone else that you'd like to see be a guest on our podcast, who would you suggest? And sky's the limit, you're welcome to suggest whomever you want.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to really, sky's the limit, I would say Charlie Munger, but I'm just kidding. But unfortunately, he's not. Sorry?
I said that would be a trick.
Yeah,
Yes.
that would be a trick to do. But I think, I think there are many, many great entrepreneurs with great stories, especially coming out of other parts of the world, right? With amazingly inspiring stories. So one of them out of India that, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant people I've seen, is this person who's the founder of a company called Infosys. It's a listed company and started the whole IT services revolution out of India. A person called Nandan Nilekani.
Okay.
He has had, tremendous impact, not only as the founder of a large, publicly listed company, which has changed the face of India, but he has also gone on to have dramatic impact in sort of pushing all kinds of techno policy aspects into India. So the so it's influenced the government to make certain fundamental changes. So for example, our payments infrastructure in India, the digital payments infrastructure right now is probably one of the most, probably the most advanced globally, right? You would be shocked to understand, to know the trillions of transactions that have, that happen on a yearly basis, right? And this has impacted everyone from, you know, the daily wage earner all the way up to, you know, the rich folks, right? And it's transformed the economy. It's transformed how money flows in India. So these kinds of impact, right, which is pure public service at some level, is transformational. So I would love it if there was a podcast with him. He's, in my opinion, one of the most brilliant minds of the century. So
done. He is on the list. We're going to make best efforts to get him.
Cool.
Good stuff. Well, Vikram, I very much enjoyed our time together. If there are any members of our audience who want to get a hold of you, how can they find you?
Oh, they can find me on LinkedIn. They can find me on my website, needle.ai. And if they want to reach out to me on email, it's vikram@needle.ai. So.
Fantastic. And again, Vikram, thank you so much for joining us today. I really appreciate it. And for the benefit of our audience again, Vikram Srinivasan, co-founder and CEO of Needle.ai. And again, I'm your host, Christian Marquez, founder and CEO of FinTrack Management. Thank you for joining us for another episode of the Innovators and Investors Podcast.
Thanks a ton for having me, Christian. It was wonderful. Thank you so much.
Christian Marquez here. Thank you so much for listening to the Innovators and Investors Podcast. If you're a successful founder or an investor, would like to be on the podcast, please visit podcast.finstratmgmt.com. If you know someone that would be a great guest, please tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag Innovators and Investors. I'd love to see your posts and suggestions. We're regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you catch each new episode, please subscribe to the Innovators and Investors podcast. And your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and it means a lot to me and my team. Would you like to know more? Go to our website, finstratmgmt.com, or follow us on LinkedIn or on X. Our handle is @finstratmgmt. This is Christian Marquez. Thank you for listening. Until next time.